The Gemara in Tainus, Daf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph, tells us that one of the greatest men of his generation was Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas. He was known as Mara de Eretz Yisrael, the Torah teacher in Klal Yisrael at the time. Rashi tells us that to his address came all issues, communal, personal. To his home came all problems. He was the Torah sage. He was the leader of his generation. Despite the fact that he was a tzaddik, despite the fact that he was an Adam Gadol, he had a very difficult life. The Gemara's description of his life is Dechikile Milsa Tuva. He lived an austere, difficult life. He suffered pain, poverty, illness, disease. He had a very rough life setting. And the Gemara gives us an example, a day in the life of Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas. Explains the Gemara that one day he went for a medical procedure, and when he came back home, he found a bare cupboard. But a bare cupboard meant literally nothing to eat. Whilst he was a tremendous manhig in the Klal Yisrael, he wouldn't take tzedakah. He remained pure. And he suffered with poverty. He came home, found nothing to eat, reached in. The only thing he could find was a clove of garlic. He bit into the clove of garlic and passed out from malnourishment. The word quickly spread that the great Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas is unconscious. Osi l'shuli bei Rabbanan. The Rabbanan came to visit to see what was doing, what was happening with him. And the Gemara describes that when he's in this state of unconsciousness, they witnessed the following. First he began crying, then he began laughing, then a beam of light came out from his forehead. Ki is a'er, when he awoken, they said to him, my high, what's the meaning of this? The crying, the laughing, the beam of light. Says Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas, when I was in that state of unconsciousness, Yashav imi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem himself came to visit. And I said to Hashem, Ad Masai etzta'er bai alma, Hashem, when will my suffering end? How long do I have to suffer in this world for? And Hashem said back to me, Elazar b'ni, Elazar my son, Nichalach da'apich la'alma mereisha, is it good for you? Would you like me to turn back the world to its moment of creation? Efsha de Meshas Beshas de Mazoni, maybe you'll be born into a time of sustenance. The Marsha helps us understand this Gemara, and he explains that Hashem was offering Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas something unique. Your life is difficult? Do you feel it's too hard? Would you like me to find you a different life? Do you want me to find you a different generation, a different life setting? Take you out of your current life and put you into a different generation? And while this offer was unique, Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas didn't know if he had the strength to continue. He didn't know if he had the strength to go on, so he said to Hashem as follows, did I live half of my days? If I lived half of my life, I think I can continue. If not, I'm not sure. Did I live half of my years? Hashem said back, yes, you lived half of your life. Im kein lo ba'ina. If so, says Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas, I don't wish for you to put me into a different life. Put me back into the life that I had been leading. At which point Hashem said to him, Elazar, the reward that's awaiting you is an estate that's so wide and so vast that there are 13 rivers running through it. Again, the Marsha on the commentaries helps us by explaining this man's reward is in the world to come. In the world to come, there are no rivers, there are no estates. It's a parable. Imagine a man in our world who's so wealthy. He owns tracts and tracts of land. He owns so much land that literally there are rivers. Imagine a man who owns an entire state. That's how wealthy, with 13 rivers running through it. That's a parable to this man's world to come. Unimaginable. When Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas heard that, he said to Hashem, Kuli hai v'sulo. That's all, just 13 rivers, no more. And Hashem said back to him, if I give you more, what's going to be left to your friends? Explains the Marsha that when Hashem creates each person, Hashem creates for that person a chelik in the world to come. When Hashem creates a Jew, Hashem gives that person a portion in the world to come. It's theirs for the claiming. If they claim it, it's theirs. If unclaimed, it's left where it is. Says Rabbi Elazar bar Pedas, don't give me those portions from other people who have earned it. Give me those portions who haven't been earned. At which point Hashem touched him on the forehead, saying, Giri Bach, as it's a touche, well said. And with that, the Gemara ends. Now, let's begin analyzing this Gemara with the obvious question. We're dealing with an Adam Gadol. We're dealing with a great man. We're dealing with a man who lives his entire life to serve his people, to serve his creator. The man is a tzaddik. And he's suffering. He's not suffering lightly. He's suffering so acutely that the very first words that he says to Hashem is, Ad masai etzdar, Hashem, when will my suffering end? The man was a Torah sage. Wouldn't you imagine he had many, many questions to ask Hashem? Yet the very first thing that comes out of his lips are, Hashem, when will my suffering end? Because he suffered in a very real way. So here's the question. If we have a tzaddik who's suffering, and he's petitioning to Hashem, wouldn't you imagine that Hashem, who's filled with rachamim, would say, Allah zabani, my son, you've done well. I'll take over from here on in. You won't suffer anymore. Don't worry about it. But astonishingly, that's not what Hashem says. Hashem says this rather perplexing expression. Do you want me to turn back the world to its moment of creation? Maybe you'll be born into a time of sustenance. If I were a Beloza Bar Pedas, I would say, don't turn back the world to its moment of creation. How about a cup of coffee and a tuna fish sandwich? He's not asking for ashirus. He's not asking for wealth. He's not asking for honors. He's asking for basic sustenance. Why didn't Hashem just say, okay, you won't suffer anymore? And this Gemara, I believe, well helps us frame and understand life from a very different perspective, but we have to understand what, in fact, is the answer to this question. And to just answer this question, I'd like to share with you a parable. Imagine the following. Imagine a well-known actor gets a call from his agent, and it sounds something like this. Hey, listen, Jack, we got a great script. It's a guaranteed Oscar. I'm going to send it by. I want you to sign on it. We're going to do the deal. Next day, the actor gets the script, reads through it, and his agent calls back. Jack, we're going to do the deal, right? Nope. Jack, well, what is it? The cash? We can get more cash for the deal. Not the cash. I'm not doing it. Jack, what is it? The other actor? We can change him. I'm not doing it. Jack, what is it? It's an Oscar. What's the problem? What's the problem? The problem is the part you have me playing. The guy's a down and out. He's a loser. Yeah, but Jack, that's just the part you're playing. We're going to do a guy, right? Doing the part means the whole world sees me as a luckless down and out, a loser. I can't stand the embarrassment. He hangs up the phone. Now, that conversation never happened because any actor, as well as anyone going to the theater, understands that the actor is given a role to play. He's given a very exact script. He's given stage settings. And then he's told to go out there and play your part. And there's only one criteria for judging the actor. How well did he play his part? If his part to play was the most successful, glib individual on the planet, but he played his part poorly, the critics will rip him to shreds. If his part to play was an idiot savant, but he played it well, he'll win accolades, he'll win awards. The actor is given a stage setting, the actor is given a role to play, and then the actor is judged by one criteria. How well did you play your part? And I believe that that's an apt parable, a proper mushel for life. Before Hashem created us, Hashem gave each of us a very exact stage setting. You will be born in this generation. You will be given these strengths and these weaknesses, this level of intelligence, and this level of personality traits. This is your life. And at the end of our day, each of us are judged. But I'm not compared to you. You're not compared to him. None of us are compared to Rav Moshe Feinstein or Rabbi Geiger or the Chassam Sofer. Each of us are compared to a much more demanding and exacting standard, the standard of me. I've heard it said over in the name of the Gra that the most painful moment in a person's life is not during that fatal car crash, not even when that crunch of metal, the crash of glass, not even when he's hovering over his body. Not even when they pull the blanket over the dead body and say, he's no longer with us, and you're screaming, I'm alive, stop it. Not even when they take your casket to the cemetery. Not even when they lower it. Not even when they cover it with dirt. It's when you separate and you stand in front of the Beis Din Shamala and they hold up this picture of this great man, this accomplished human being, a man who changed himself and changed the very generation that he lived in, and they say to me, why isn't that you? Me? little me? You want me to be that great person, that accomplished human being? What do you want from me? And they say but one expression. That is you. That is you had you used your talent, your abilities. That's you had you become that which you were destined to be. But you see, that picture is a picture of me. Not a picture of Haigon, not a picture of Rabbi Akiva. It's a picture of me based on my strength, my talents, my abilities, based on the generation into which I was born. Not a human being that I know woke up in the morning and said, Hashem, I think you should make me with 180 IQ. You know, brilliant, sharp, fast. No, Hashem, change that. Make that an 80 IQ. Kind of daft and kind of slow. It's better for life, you know? I don't know the human being who woke up and said, Hashem, make me 6'4", big and strong, healthy. No, Hashem, make me 4'6", kind of crunched over. We don't get to choose our physical setting. We don't get to choose our intelligence. We also don't get to choose much of our temperament. In Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence, he writes that at 22 months of age, they can determine the nature of the infant, extroverted or introverted, bold or timid, because hardwired into birth is a certain teva, a certain nature. Can you go further with it? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, each of us were given vastly different skills, talents, abilities. Each of us have vastly different life settings, and is only one question that they asked. How much of you did you become? 80%, 60%, 40%. But I'm not compared to you, and you're not compared to anyone else. Each of us is compared to the most demanding, exacting standard, the standard of me. My talents, my skills, my abilities, my challenges, how much of me did I become? And I believe that this concept is fundamental to making sense out of life. I have girls, and if you're not familiar with this, there is the mantra of the high school girl. The mantra of the high school girl, which you'll hear them say over and over and over, is, it's not fair. It's just not fair. She's so pretty, and she has such nice clothes, and her parents are not nice. It's just not fair. And I'd like to share with you that her perspective is correct. If Hashem created us for our station in this world, if life ends in the grave, you know, when Elsie the cow dies, her nefesh evaporates, it's done with, it's over. If you and I ended in the grave, then that which Hashem did would be very, very unfair. Because you don't have to go very far to see that different people have different lives. Some people are very, very skilled. Some people aren't. Some people are gifted, and some people aren't. Some people have great social expertise, and some people have social anxiety. And when you look around even a small group of people, you see vastly different lives. And I'd like to share with you that most people are trying to be successful at life. I know very few people say, let me become an abject failure. Let me just trash my life. Let me just live a life of misery, become a bum, and just whatever. But not everybody succeeds. I'll share with you an example. I know two brothers. One brother, everything he touches turns to gold. Financially, very, very successful. Beautiful marriage. Each of his children, one is more special than the other. And he has a brother, the other brother, well, not everything he touches turns to gold. As a matter of fact, everything he touches turns to mud. Can't earn a living. His shalom bias, his marriage is kind of on the rocks. His kids, excuse my expression, one's a bigger misery than the other. But here's the point. Two children born to the same parents, brought up in the same home, went to the same yeshivas, leading vastly different lives. And don't tell me that one's trying and the other isn't, because they're both trying. But once you look around and recognize that all of it is irrelevant, it's obvious that when I leave this earth, they don't ask me how much money I made. They don't ask me how pretty I was or handsome. They don't ask me how smart I was. They don't ask me how talented. They don't ask me what stage settings Hashem gave me. They ask me, what did I do with them? What did I accomplish? How far did I go? How much growth did I accomplish? How much did I change me? And this understanding is imperative to making sense out of life. This perspective is fundamental to understanding why Hashem created us and why Hashem gave vastly different lives. It all doesn't matter. We're all but actors on that stage of life, And each of us were given different strengths, different talents, different abilities, different roles to play, and none of it matters because there's only one question: how much of you did you become? How much of your potential, your greatness, your capacity did you reach? And I have a mushal that I think well encapsulates this concept. There was a novel written many years ago, and I was told it was later turned into a movie. The storyline goes something like this. There was a professional football player, quarterback, who was getting in shape for the Super Bowl, which was 3 weeks forward. So to get in shape for the big game, he's riding his bike on a country road. He's riding for quite a while, and at the end of the country road, there's a long, winding tunnel. The football player heads into this long, winding tunnel on this side. Unbeknownst to him, on the other side of the tunnel, there's a car heading directly towards him. Well, as the story goes, the angel of death is new on the job that day. The angel of death sees the football player heading this way, sees the car heading the other way. The angel of death says to himself, listen, why wait for the blood, the mess, the gore? Instead of waiting for the actual collision, the angel of death takes the football player out of his body, brings him up to heaven, and they bury the body of the football player. Well and fine, except one problem. The angel of death made a mistake. You see, any normal person would have crashed, deserves to be dead, deserves to be up in heaven. But this man was an athlete with keen instincts. The last minute he would have veered off, would not have hit the car, deserves to be alive. The problem is his body's buried, is up in heaven. What do we do now? A whole tumult up in Shemayim. So they decide to do the only thing they could do. They find a person whose time, in fact, is up. A person close in age to the football player as possible. And this football player opens his eyes and finds himself in this mansion. Finds himself put into the body of this rich tycoon. He looks around. He sees the butlers, the maids, the glitter. Then he looks at his watch. Realizes he's got 3 weeks to the Super Bowl. Feels the flab of this pampered body. And the cute part of the story is that he has the butlers and the maids on the front lawn running football drills with him as he tries to get his arm in shape for the big game. Cute story. But there's a very particular punchline. I'd like to share with you that that exact experience happened to every one of us. Before I was here, before I was put into this body, I, the one who'm thinking, I, the one who feel, was a neshama under the kisei kavod. And Hashem said, this is the generation into which you shall be born, into this body, with this level of intelligence, these levels of talents, these natural inclinations, in this birth order, with these siblings, with these parents. This is the ideal stage setting for you. This is the stage for your perfection. This is the opportunity for you to become the great person that you can become. But handcrafted, custom designed exactly to meet my needs, my requirements. I was given a stage setting that fits me like a hand in glove. And I believe that that's the answer to Rabbi Elazar bar Pinhas. You see, great wealth is a major life test. When you wake up in the morning and you're rich, but I mean filthy rich, when you know that you can buy and sell the city, that's a very real life test. There's a sense of power, of independence. I don't need anyone. I don't need my kids. I don't need my wife. I don't need God. I can buy and sell the world. That is a major life test. And as wealth is a major life test, so too is poverty. When you're so poor that you don't know how you're going to pay your mortgage, and the calls are coming in, and the word foreclosure is used time and time again, and finally you scrape together enough money to make that payment. It's late at night, you're driving, and you hit a parked car. You look left, you look right, and no one saw. Do you leave your phone number or do you not? That is a major life test. And I believe what Hashem was saying to Rabbi Elazar bar Pinhas is it's not by accident. You weren't put into this life of poverty because I ran out of money. Hashem has lots and lots and lots of money. Says Hashem to Rabbi Elazar bar Pinhas, you were put into this life because this fits you like a hand in glove. It's perfect for you. It's been custom made, hand designed to be the perfect life. Do you want me to find you a different generation, a different life setting that doesn't include poverty but still will allow you to actualize your potential? Says Hashem, Efsha, maybe I can and maybe I can't, because this one has been perfectly designed for you. And this understanding, I believe, is fundamental to understanding life and certainly fundamental to understanding life settings. If you are listening to this, you are dealing with some major life issues. And I'd like to be the first one to guarantee to you that you did not choose it. I do not know the human being who woke up and said, Hashem, I would just love to be racked with desires and needs and hungers and appetites that I cannot control. I would love that feeling of being out of control. I would love to wake up and say, what was I thinking? What did I do? What was my problem? Hashem, please give that to me. That sounds great. That sounds like a wonderful treat. I don't think that many people have asked for it. And if they have, they don't have a clue to what an assignment is. But you see, that's the point. It wasn't by accident that you were given this. You did not create your body. You did not create your mind. You did not create your intelligence. You did not create your drives. You did not create any of these things. And I guarantee you did not choose to be born into the 20th or the 21st century. I don't believe ever in the course of life has there been this level of insanity in Taiva. We're not talking about normal, regular stuff that goes on. I can't even illustrate. We'll spend time later maybe trying to illustrate a normal environment versus what we're currently in. But suffice it to say the following. If you took the biggest mushchasim of Sdom va'Amora, take the most depraved individuals you could ever imagine. These were the gedolim of Sdom, the people who were the leaders in darkness and depravity. Put them in front of an unfiltered internet portal for half an hour. They would fall on their faces in utter humility. We were no one. We were nobody. The stuff you guys have, we couldn't even dream of it. We couldn't imagine. And you guys, you put it on everyone's smartphone, everyone's laptop. It's there everywhere. You guys are gedolim. We were no one. The level of things that pass for normalcy in our generation are so absurd, so out of control, that I don't think anyone alive chose this. And I don't want to date myself, but I have been around for a little bit. And even when I started this game, it was nowhere near as bad as it is now. So the first thing that you have to realize before you even begin to work is that, number one, I did not choose this body. I did not choose desires. I did not choose this generation. Hashem has put me here, and put me here not by accident. I could have just as easily been born 500 years ago. I could have been born 1,000 years ago. Life was very different back then. Were there still temptations? Oh, there were. Were there still fights? Oh, there were. But they were of a totally different ilk, a totally different sort. The fact that I was put into this generation, the fact that I was given these challenges is because these fit me. I need these. These are the stage setting for my growth, my opportunity to perfect myself. And I'd like to share with you something that's a bit eye-opening. The Gra on the Gaon says this many a time, but if you look in Sefer Yonah, he specifically says this repeatedly. If you'd like to know what you're here to accomplish, you want to know what your area that you're supposed to work on, he says it should be very, very simple to see. All you have to do is ask yourself, what are the areas that I fail in regularly? What are the areas that I have real desires in? And says the Gra, it should be obvious to you that that's why you're here. That's your major battle, and that's what you're here to work on. And that is a very eye-opening, very important concept to understand. I did not choose to be where I am now. I did not choose these desires, the situation, the life setting, and the only question that they're going to ask me is, one, not how am I here, not how do I get here, but what did I do with it? Did I fight? Did I learn how to work on myself? Did I learn how to face challenges? Did I learn how to change? Did I get in the fight knowing that I'd be knocked down, but I don't care, I'm getting back in the fight and fight again? And so many times people begin the fight and they end up doing something and they say to themselves, what is my problem? How did I do that? I quit. And I quit fundamentally comes from a lack of understanding what the game is. They don't ask you if you were the tzaddik of the generation. They ask you, given the life setting you were given, how many times were you willing and able to get back in the fight, get back in time after time? And that's what victory is made up of. But I didn't choose these desires. I didn't choose the environment. And what I've done, I've done. But that's almost something I was set up into, almost something I was put into, almost something that was hand-delivered to me. When a person is born with a 75 IQ, they don't demand of him mastering shas and poskim. And when a person is born with various desires, appetites, and hunger, they don't ask him to be the tzaddik ador. They ask, did you fight? Did you grow? Did you change? Can you change yourself and accomplish? Oh, yeah. Can you make yourself into a vastly different person? Yes. But the only question they ask you is, how far did you go? What did you accomplish? How much of you did you become? How much of your challenge did you face? And I believe that this concept is fundamental to understanding why we're here. We're going to touch on a little bit later why it is that certain people almost seem to be placed directly into a very exact setting. But for now, suffice it to say that Hashem understands exactly your strengths, your weaknesses, your abilities, puts you in this situation because this is the opportunity for you to grow. This is the stage setting for you to reach your perfection. And the only question they ask is, how much of you did you become? I believe Rabbi Elazar bar Parnas is a fundamental perspective. The man suffered, but not lightly. He suffered pain, poverty, illness, disease. And he didn't turn to Hashem and say, my life stinks. He didn't turn to Hashem and say, my life, I can't bear. When he left this life, he said to Hashem, I don't know if I could bear it anymore. When will my suffering end? But he also understood life. And what Hashem was saying to him was, you were given this position, put into this stage setting, because this is the perfect opportunity for you to reach your perfection, for you to reach your growth, for you to become the person you should become. And this perspective is essential of making sense out of life, and certainly an essential perspective for working on taiva. The questions that they ask me aren't, how did you end up here? That was almost a given. You see, if you put on 400 pounds because you're lazy, you never work out, you eat like a without control, you put yourself there. As we'll soon see, if you were born in this generation and ended up with certain real desires, appetites, started doing things that you were vastly embarrassed about, they don't ask you how you ended up here. You were born into this. The only question is, where did you go from here? And there's one last point that I want to really close this session with, and that is an observation about this person, Rabbi Elazar bar Parnas. Do you remember when the Chachamim came in, they saw three things? He began crying, began laughing, then a beam of light came out of his head. He was unconscious. He was in another world, and these were the three reactions that they saw. Now, the laughing, I certainly understand. If you were told that your world to come is a wide, vast estate with 13 rivers running through it, you'd also find it humorous. So the laughing, I understand. The beam of light, I also understand. Hashem said, this is your world to come. It's so unimaginable, beyond the king's ransom. And Rabbi Elazar bar Parnas said, Sulo, no more? He demonstrated real ambition. He demonstrated real aspirations. You see, Hashem did not create a single human being for mediocrity. Hashem didn't put us on a planet to whatever. Hang out, make some money, spend the money, make some money, and then we die. Well, have a couple of kids and whatever. Hashem put us on a planet to grow, to accomplish, to reach stellar heights. And as great as you can imagine being, there's more that you can accomplish, more that you can reach. And when Hashem said to Rabbi Elazar bar Parnas, you know what you've accomplished? You've hit the heights. 13 rivers, it's unimaginable, your wealth. Says Rabbi Elazar bar Parnas, no more. I could do more. There's more gas in my tank. I could accomplish more. And he demonstrated real growth aspirations, growth desires. And Hashem touched him on the forehead saying, Giri bach touche, as if to say, well said, Rabbi Elazar, well said, my son. So I understand the beam of light. But why did he cry? So if you look at Rashi and Gemara, Rashi says the reason why he cried is because when Hashem first appeared to him, he was suffering so acutely. And he said, Amasa yitzdar, Hashem, when will my suffering end? Hashem said, do you want me to give you a different life? And he didn't know if he could continue. So he said to Hashem, tell me, did I live half of my life? If I lived half of my life, I think I can continue. If not, I'm not sure. Hashem said, yes, you lived half your life. Says Rashi, at that point he began crying. Oy vey, half of my life gone. And he starts crying. That Rashi is very difficult to understand. Here we have a man who's using his life appropriately. He's living a difficult life, very difficult. And despite it, he's accomplishing, he's growing. He's living through what many people call Gehenna, but but he's reaching the heights. Wouldn't you imagine that he'd be ecstatic? Thank God, half of this thing is gone. Why is he crying? It's almost like imagine a man running a marathon. Man's running a marathon, and he's doing great. At mile 20, the judges say to him, "You're setting a world record. Just keep it up." Hoy vey, 20 miles gone. What are you crying for? Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas should be dancing a jig. Baruch Hashem, I'm done half of this thing called torture, called life. Would you like to know the answer to this question? You see, when Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas opened his eyes in the morning, he understood life. He knew why he was here. And he viewed life with a very specific perspective. 24 hours to change myself and change the world in which I live. Let's go. The value of life is accomplishing, growing, changing. Let's go. Do you know what I could accomplish in a moment? You know what I can accomplish in an hour? Oh my goodness. Because he understood life, life was precious. Because he understood life, he had a love for life. I don't think ever in the course of history has this message been more applicable than our current times. In Western civilization, in our day, mankind flourishes. Never in the course of history has there been this much wealth, abundance, and opportunity. The average taxpaying citizen in our world enjoys luxuries that kings of yesteryear couldn't imagine. Every one of us has the opportunity of education, of religion, of assembly. We have the right to live our life as we wish. We have every innovation, every luxury at our fingertips, and by and large, we have the money for whatever it is we need, and we could shape our lives exactly as we wish. No longer do we fear marauders, the Black Plague. No longer do we fear towns being sacked. We have health improvements. We have systems of government. We have safety. Mankind has arrived. And you'd imagine that in our generation, mankind as a whole would be happy. All that man ever dreamt about was the ability to create a life, freedom, earn a living, bring up your kids as you wish. And everyone has that today. And so everyone should be happy, should be ecstatic. It's all man ever dreamt of. And yet, if you look around today, that's not quite what you see. In the United States of America, there are tens of millions of cases of clinical depression. Clinical depression doesn't mean, oh, drat, I'm in a bad mood. Clinical depression doesn't mean, oh, how am I going to get through the day or the week? Clinical depression means you can't get out of bed in the morning. But modern science shares with us that but a fraction of those millions, tens of millions of cases have an attributable cause. An attributable cause means a reason for you to be depressed. If a woman was married for 30 years and she just lost her spouse, that's a reason for her to be depressed. She has to work on it because her entire life just became unglued. If she'll need therapy, if she'll need medication, it makes sense because something major has happened in her life. If a person lived through a trauma, whether it be loss of a loved one or a situation, that might well be an attributable cause, a reason to be depressed. If you have a generic predisposition, a gift from your parents, that's also an attributable cause. That's a reason for depression. But of the tens of millions of cases of clinical depression, but a fraction of them have an attributable cause. The rest of them have lived through no trauma, haven't lost a loved one, don't have a predisposition by genetics for depression, but they wake up in the morning and say, "Blech, life stinks. What's your problem? You're making money. Your company's successful. You're even married, and you have kids, and you drive such a gorgeous car. What's your problem?" And more than that, there are no rules. Run around, do what you want. Do what you want, when you want. You don't have a Torah. You're not obligated by rules. Live your life as you wish. What could be better than that? And they run around, and they do what they do, and they wake up empty and depressed. And I'd like to share with you why. If you take a fine surgical instrument and use it to pry open a window, it does a lousy job and it dulls the blade. If you take the human being who was created to grow, to change, to accomplish, and you use this thing called life for any purpose other than that, life itself doesn't work. And there's an inner noise and an inner lack of harmony. And there's a sense of, ugh, I'm empty. Life stinks. But once you understand life, once you understand why Hashem created us, once you're able to look at yourself and say, "I get it. Hashem put me into a very difficult situation to grow, to accomplish, and I'm challenged, and I'm marked by one single question. How much of me did I become? How hard did I fight? You look at life with a very different lens. You recognize life is precious. I could change. I could grow for eternity. I am what I shape myself into. Then you look at life with a tremendous love. Rabbi Elazar bar Pedah suffered more than you and I or anyone else that we know. Yet he had such a love for life that when Hashem said, half of your life is gone, ay vey, life, the most precious commodity, life itself is gone, and he cried. I believe this is eye-opening. I believe this is illustrative. May Hashem grant us the ability to apply this perspective to our lives, to our situation.